And now for something completely different.
Welcome back to episode 2 of Chat with a Cat. This episode is being recorded following the 1980 preseason and before any of the 1980 regular season sims, so you can place it in your timeline as you wish. I'm going to have a, I guess, brief reaction in this show to the draft, to the preseason, but I'm going to start with what I think is maybe the most interesting way of starting off, and that is calling some shots. So this will be something that we'll look back on toward the end of the season and see what I got right, what I got wrong. But I'm going to start by looking at five players that I think were drafted way too high in the creation draft, and I'm going to look at five players that I thought went way too low in the creation draft. So we'll start with the bad, and then we'll go to the good, and then we'll talk a little bit about how the preseason and the draft shook out in general, and just some observations that even the preseason can let us make fairly easily. So with that, let's jump in. Five players that went way too high in the creation draft, and the common thread among all of these players is that they are players that do not have a lot of what I would call marketable offensive skills. We were still seeing ridiculously talented offensive players taken midway through the second round. And if you took one of these players, odds are good you're going to be at a disadvantage when you're trying to keep up with other teams offensively. And so let's start into it. So the very first player that I would say was drafted way too high went number 12 overall to the Chicago Bulls. And I think Michael Cooper went way too high. And I know in the preseason he averaged 18 points a game, but he's only putting up 4 rebounds and 4 assists in the preseason, 1.8 steals, but 2.8 turnovers. And if you look at his plus-minus, it's minus 7.7. That's second worst on the team, well, third worst on the team, behind Kyle Macy and Rick Roby. So having Michael Cooper, he's renowned for his defense, but I'm just not seeing it. And you would expect to see it in the plus-minus if his defense was that terrific, but it simply hasn't been. And the thing that perhaps should be of concern for Michael Cooper is I don't think his shooting stats are sustainable. He shot 51% from the floor, but if you look at his shooting abilities, he does have a high jump shot percentage, but his inside percentage is very low. He's got a 96 score in jump shot, but only a 25 in inside. So he's going to have a hard time finding shots. He's going to have a hard time finishing. And I just worry that I know he was taken for his defense, but his defense is not enough to stop some of the overwhelming quality of offense that we see among the top picks in the draft. And it's not like he's super special in any other way. He's not a great passer. He's a decent passer. He's not a great rebounder. Can't help much in the post, doesn't have outstanding athleticism. So I think as the season rolls on, the Bulls are going to have a little bit of buyer's remorse with Michael Cooper. And I know that DigiSkunk was hoping to get Michael Cooper instead of Michael Thompson and confuse the two, but I honestly think that he will be more pleased with with Michael Thompson's performance than Logan is with Michael Cooper's performance. So that is my first player that went way too high. It's Michael Cooper. My second player that I think went way too high, and this was number 21 overall to the Celtics, was Maurice Cheeks. Not that Maurice is necessarily bad. He's an excellent floor general. He's got a a terrific assists rating. He's very young. And because of that, I think he's going to do a good job running the team. And I just don't know that he's going to be super productive this season. I mean, he only averaged 12 points in the preseason. 10 assists is good. 2.5 steals and 2.5 turnovers means he's offsetting his turnovers. And he's running the offense, so he's going to have the ball in his hands a lot. But he's going to spend a lot of time feeding the ball to Kareem and to Elvin Hayes, which you would expect because the Celtics drafted after him mostly older players that are ready for a win now. But, you know, again, how can I best put this? You know, Cheeks is not an offensive dynamo, which a lot of the players around him were. And I think, you know, it was a good job by Angry Banana of picking up Kareem and picking up Elvin Hayes in the subsequent rounds to give him a powerful front court punch. But what I'm concerned about is age. If you look at Cheeks, he's 24, but Kareem and Elvin are 33 and 34. So yes, he will have good offensive players to pass the ball to and to offset his lack of scoring this season. But in two seasons down the line, how's that going to work out? And normally I could excuse this if, you know, say, if he was middle of the draft, and so he might have thought that some people would go with the old man strategy. But when he picked, there were only two more picks left in the first round. So it was clear, you know, if you're picking 21st, you know, you're going to pick again at 26. So you know you've got your next pick coming. And he picked Kareem. So he knew he was going to go old. And so I'm curious as to why not go all in and go with a player that is more talented now and just embrace the oldness of it. I think by trying to split the difference and having a young point guard to build around with older players in the front court to pair him with, splitting the difference is going to wind up like a 7-10 split. You're going to be able to pick up one but not the other. If Kareem and Elvin can carry the Celtics this season, they'll be good. If they can't, they're going to fall off quickly, and I don't think Maurice's offense can expand enough to carry the load as Elvin and Kareem start to decline. So that's one that I think it may not be obvious this season because I still think the Celtics have a chance to be good. But I think in two or three seasons, once their older front court players are in rapid decline, they'll see that Cheeks doesn't have what it takes to carry the team as those players' abilities, you know, erode, basically. Those were the only two picks that I thought were players that might be regretted in the first round. The next three choices were all from the second round of the draft. And I'm going to start with the Dallas Mavericks picking Johnny Moore. Johnny Moore was their second round pick. He was number 25 overall. And again, my concern here is not a lot of offensive game. Now, I think I see what the Mavericks were going for. I think they're going for assists and steals, because if you look at Moore, he's got a 100 passer rating and a 100 steal rating. So he should be, from the standpoint of a not scorer, he should be an elite player. The problem is, outside of George Gervin, whom they picked with their first pick, and Dan Issel, who's aging, the Mavericks, a lot like the Celtics, don't have a lot of offensive firepower once you get past their top one or two players. And Gervin is 28, Issel is 32, now, Moore is 22, but I think this is kind of the same problem you have with the Celtics, is you have a team with a young point guard who is supposed to be a distributor, distributing to older established players, which is fine for this season, maybe next season, but by the time we see the 1982 and the 1983 season, will it still be fine? I expect the answer is no, but, you know, again, that's one of the fun things about calling your shot is, you either look like a genius when you go back two, three seasons from now and say, see, I called it, or you look like an idiot. Or if you're like most people, say a Stephen A. Smith or a Chris Broussard, you point out all the stuff that you got right and you ignore all the stuff that you got wrong. So you look like you're a genius, even though, you know, you're batting, you know, 1 out of 5. So for the same reasons that I didn't like the Maurice Cheeks pick, I really didn't like the Johnny Moore pick, just because having picked Gervin, and it was clear that Keep It 100 was already starting to go down. I'm not going to say Gervin is old, but at 28, he's not a young pup. And so I don't think you needed to try to get a 22-year-old point guard. I don't like teams that are built on vastly different timelines. And this is one of them. The next pick that I thought was a little bit of a reach, and I think there may be some buyer's remorse, and it's ironic because all these teams performed well in the preseason, is the Denver Nuggets. And the Denver Nuggets, with their second-round pick, went with John Lucas, who's 27 years old. And if you look at how the Nuggets drafted, they didn't go hyper-focused on youth. You know, Alex English is 26, Lucas is 27, Mickey Johnson and Bobby Jones, their bigs, are 28. And so they kind of went for the middle of the road. They're not going to fall apart next season. They're going to have a few good seasons in them. But by the time all of the contracts in the creation draft expire, they are going to have to kind of look around and figure out what they're going to do. And Lucas is another one where, in the preseason, he averaged 10 assists, which is great, with just 10 points, which is not. Now, as long as Alex English can continue to average 40, I'm going to look like an idiot for making this call. But I think as time rolls on, the league is going to figure out ways to reduce English's ability to dominate on the scoring end. And then the question is, does Lucas make other players around him better, and can he elevate their scoring? And I don't think I like the answer there. The other thing that I worry about with Lucas is he has a high three-point rating, which is great for what it is, but with the way that the league worked in the 80s, where teams aren't shooting a lot of threes. I mean, if you look at the team leadership and the three-point attempts, Chicago is leading the lead with 6 threes a game, and the highest three-point percentage in the league, again, going back to the league team leaders page, I guess, would be the Lakers shooting 556. That's not sustainable. You get down to number 5, you've got Golden State shooting 33%. Even if you shoot 40% on 6 threes a game, that is an additional 2.5 points a game. That's just, I don't think that's enough to make a significant difference. So I wonder if the reason that Lucas went so highly is that three-point shot looked good, and maybe it's a little bit of fool's gold. And again, Lucas is an okay perimeter defender, but 65 is, you'd like to see more from a strong defender on the perimeter. And so I think there's going to be a little bit of regret there, that he's just not going to be productive enough on the offensive end to justify the pick selection there. And I don't like it in terms of being a bad fit for the team. I do think the team will be fine. I just think when it comes time to cash in John Lucas for other assets 5-6 years down the road, the Nuggets are going to get a lot less than maybe they had hoped to get. Finally, for the last player that I think went a little bit too high, I'm going to have to pick on Digiskunk here. And this was his number 2 round pick at number 34 overall, of Gerald Henderson. Henderson is a player that has blue potentials, but is green now, which kind of describes Digi's team. Although, looking at it, he does have 3 players that are poor now with good potentials in Woodson and Thompson and Henderson. And so maybe they grow into a team, and maybe Skunk is hoping that, this year, because he went for a lot of guys with potential that haven't realized that talent yet, his team is able to collect a top draft pick, and he's able to add a star player to his roster, and then in 2-3 years grow. Maybe that's where he's going with it, now that I think about it. But I do think, this season, Gerald Henderson's production is going to be a little bit disappointing. I mean, I look at him here in the preseason, and you're looking at, 12 points, a little less than 4 rebounds, and about 4 assists a game. You'd like to see more out of a starting point guard. So We'll see what happens there. But, you know, again, if I'm having to pick players that I think went too high, is Henderson a bad pick? No, but I think you could probably get that production from a third or fourth round pick, and I think second was a little high to take him. So having looked at the bad, let's look at the good, and we'll talk about some players that I think went way too low. And I'm going to start at the lowest of the picks and work my way back up. You know, so this is the player that I think is the best value selection. And I should note these first three selections, I think, are probably excusable due to age. But if I were to start, I would think Bob McAdoo out in Phoenix, who went number 92 overall. I think a lot of teams are going to regret passing on McAdoo. He's a true offensive center. He's 29, so he's got a couple of good years left in him before he goes into decline. If you look at his numbers in the preseason, he averaged 15 and a half and 7 rebounds, which doesn't sound impressive until you look and you realize that John Long and Magic Johnson scored 25 and 27 respectively. And as the old saying goes, there's only one ball. If he was on a team with some players that were not quite as ball dominant, I think it's quite likely we could see McAdoo touching 20 points a game. And for a third round pick, that's pretty incredible. The other thing that I really like about McAdoo is that for a big, he has a decent jump shooting score of 40. He doesn't rely on getting his points completely in the paint. And so maybe he'll be able to pull some players away a little bit. And that would let Magic operate down low without help. So, yeah, the final pick in the third round of the draft, or close to it, I think the Suns, they came away nicely with McAdoo. Actually, no, thinking about it, I think, is McAdoo the number one pick of the fourth round? Oh, no, he was the number one pick of the fifth round. My apologies. So, yeah, I think a lot of people are going to be very upset that they let McAdoo slide all the way to the fifth round, because he's going to be as productive as most third-round selections, possibly some second-round selections, just, you know, in this cat's opinion. The next player that I think went a little low, and maybe this is some flowers going back to the Mavericks after kind of beating them up for the Johnny Moore pick, is in fact the Dan Issel pick. Now, again, this is one that I suspect the reason that he went as low as he did was his age. He's 32 years old, but he's got a 99 inside scoring, so he can score basically as well as anybody in the league. And he's a pretty decent shooter. If you take a look at his preseason numbers, he averaged 24 points. Now, he's on 44% shooting. I suspect that's going to go up because his inside field goal percentage was just 53%. Most bigs of his caliber shoot 60, 65% on the inside. So as long as he continues doing most of his damage inside, I think those numbers will come up. But, you know, 24 points a game from a guy who didn't get picked until pick number 22 of round three, so very end of the third round. You know, everybody else had three cracks at taking this guy. And if you don't have three players that are giving you, you know, 24 points a game, maybe you're looking a little askance at that. And I think, you know, again, because of age, I don't know that the Keep It Up is going to be able, or Keep It 100 is going to be able to get a ton of value for him later. But in terms of value right now, that's a great value pick. The third pick that I think went way too low, and I touched on this player before, this is with the Celtics, and even if I, you know, wasn't thrilled with the Cheeks pick, I think the Elvin Hayes pick for the Celtics was absolutely amazing. So, you know, Kareem being 34 as your number two overall pick, but he's still, you know, if we remember the mock draft, he was like, I don't know, what about top 10 overall, and in the preseason he's averaging 31 and 11, so Kareem can still play. And you know who else can still play is Elvin Hayes. Elvin Hayes averaged 17 and 9. And so between the two of them, you've got 20 rebounds a game and about 3.5 blocks per game. Each of them has a plus minus of over 9. The Celtics front court is going to be scary this season. And for anybody who is thinking about going up against the Celtics, most teams didn't really get two quality big men. I think a lot of teams had one very good big man, and then they're just trying to fill the gaps. Because as I mentioned in my draft preview, there were a lot of good centers, not very many good power forwards. And I think a lot of teams will be starting guys that were drafted as small forwards at their power forward spot. And here the Celtics have two guys that are legitimately all-star talents at center, and they're able to play one at center and one at power forward. So the proximate problem in the Atlantic Division this year is likely going to be figuring out how to get around the Twin Towers there in Boston. Do I think that's going to last for 5 years? I don't. But at least for the first couple of years of the league, Angry Banana has a very formidable team in Boston, and it will be interesting to watch to see who's able to to get by them and trip them up. You know, they had about the fifth best point differential in the preseason, and we'll see if they're able to continue that. Next up, and this is one of, there were three or four players that when they came off the board, I was hopping mad. And this is one of them, and this is from the New Jersey Nets. And I know the Nets only went 1-5 in the preseason, but...
They ask you how you are, you just have to say that you're fine, when you're not really fine, but you just can't get into it because they would never understand.
Yeah, so that was me at the draft when this player went. This was Daryl Dawkins. Now, Dawkins went as overall, what was the 63rd? I'm going to pull it up here. About the 63rd pick in the draft. 60th pick of the draft. Went number 14 in round 3. I was hoping he would slide to number 20. But Dawkins is a player that has a ton of raw athletic potential. He's decent now on the inside, but we know from history, frankly, from his potential ratings, he's going to be a pretty darn good shot blocker and rebounder, and also pretty good inside scorer. And that's been borne out in the preseason, where he is averaging 27.7 points a game. Now, you can complain that, you know, he also averages 5.2 turnovers, so there's that. But Dawkins, as a 23-year-old talent, to go with Larry Drew and T.R. Dunn and Cliff Robinson, I have to say, the Nets look like one of those teams that is not going to be great this season, but as we go through training camp, they're going to do leaps and bounds. And Dawkins scares me now. Cliff Robinson and Larry Drew, I think, are a couple of years away. But it would not shock me to see Dawkins pick up an all-star berth and maybe even an all-league selection, even at center, even with the talent that we have at the center position. I liked his game that much. And you know, if you're not one of the teams that picked after him, you better be able to show me three players that are better so you know you don't feel bad about it. And finally, the player that I think was another player that went a little lower than maybe they should have, came from the San Diego Clippers. And this was the number 51 pick overall. And that's interesting. Oh, I clicked on the wrong team here as I was looking up. So anyway, the Clippers, number 151 pick overall, and that's James Edwards. And I know when we look at centers, James Edwards is not a name that jumps out to a lot of us. But in the preseason, he averaged only 29 minutes a game. So you figure that's going to go up, once the depth charts come in and he gets the proper amount of minutes, maybe from 30 to 40, and he averaged 14 points. So he could be close to a 20-point-a-game scorer. Is he a dominating center? No. But is he a guy that occasionally can outscore the other guy and most nights, you know, make it so it's not a runaway? I think so. And so I think the James Edwards pick was a very nice one. He's young, so he'll be able to grow with Reggie Theus. And the other thing that I really like about Edwards is, you know, you look at his field goal percentage in the preseason. It was almost 54%. And so, you know, his shot selection is pretty decent, and he's got room to grow in his potentials as well. I think eventually he's going to become a pretty good shot blocker, a pretty good rebounder on both ends of the glass. So, you know, good on the Clippers for finding James Edwards. And, you know, again, I think maybe this year you don't see him, but 2 years from now, I think he's really, really blossomed. And I think the Clippers are going to have a scary 1-2 punch with Edwards and Reggie Theus. So having done that, I want to quickly break down how I see some of the divisions shaking out. I don't want to go through all of them in detail because it's very hard to read anything from the preseason. Actually, you know what? I'm going to save the division preview maybe for after we're one or two sims in and I can see what teams are doing with real lineups. So let me talk real quick about home court advantage in the Fast Break Simulator. One thing that I think it's always worth taking a look at in the preseason, because I think it gives you a little bit of information that maybe you can hang on to, is looking at the home versus away split. So if you look at the Atlantic Division went 10-5 at home. The Central Division went 6-8, 10-12, 13-4 at home. The Midwest Division, 3-6, 8-10, 12-6. The Pacific Division went 7-8-9, 10-8 at home. So of all the divisions, they were the worst, and they were still 10-8. The reason I think that's an interesting thing to look at is because it gives you some idea of what home court advantage means in the league, and therefore why you might want home court advantage in the playoffs. When you're in a situation where it's just a scramble, nobody's lineups are set, you know, this is what I think you could say is kind of the raw home court advantage show, as opposed to, you know, as people are able to scheme and select matchups and maybe overcome some of that home court advantage, that's where coaching comes into the playoffs. But it gives you an idea of what the natural home court advantage is. And generally speaking, you know, you're looking at, you know, I think if you average all that out, you're looking at what, like 62-63% winning percentage at home. That's pretty significant, and that's hard to overcome. So the higher seed you can get in the regular season, generally the better, because you're going to have home court advantage longer. And I think what happens, I know what happens in real life, is generally it's not the stars. The stars generally do the same at home on the road. It's the role players that tend to do better at home versus on the road. I haven't watched closely enough in Fast Break to see if that is indeed the case, but a home court winning percentage of somewhere in the vicinity of 60% does seem right to me historically as I've looked through things. So I mentioned in my previous podcast, some teams might be looking to stack their team in a specific way, or, you know, tip lineups in a certain way to make sure they get home court advantage. And this is where I would say if you want to go one level above just kind of generally, you know, trying to tip things in your favor, it is going through the sim schedule and looking for sims where you might have three or four in-division games packed into a sim and maybe make slight lineup adjustments specific to matching up with the other teams in your division. And that is sometimes tough to do because, you know, what do they say? Styles make fights, and you may have a bunch of teams that have vastly different styles in your division. But if most of your division is playing the same style of basketball, and you can identify, let's say, sim number 8, where you're playing them 4 or 5 times in the span of the, you know, 2-ish weeks that you sim, and you can put in a lineup, especially on the road, that picks up wins, but, you know, if you can go 4-1 in that stretch, that helps you A, with your record, but also B, with tiebreakers. And in early seasons of the league, before the talent has had a chance to be swept up by trades, where development can happen, but you know, where we're all, at least in theory, on kind of a level playing field, that can make a huge difference, because tiebreakers do come into play more in the early seasons than in the late seasons of a league. In my experience, the earliest seasons of the league are filled with the most parity. Once you get 10, 20, 30 seasons in, some of the GMs that really understand the game have often had a chance to accumulate players, accumulate draft picks from less experienced GMs. And this speaks a little bit to something that I mentioned in the thread that was in the forums. I'm going to pull it up here. Sorry, I'm kind of doing this live off the cuff. But just kind of a town hall thread, I guess it was. I mentioned one of the reasons that it's nice to come back for a creation draft is you're not, excuse me, you're not cleaning up after someone else's mistakes. I mentioned there that usually when a sim league gets an opening, it's not a perennial playoff contender with depth, with a lot of draft picks, with, you know, a lot of points in the bank to do player training. It's usually because somebody gets frustrated, they quit the league, they sold off all of their future draft picks to try to win now, and they've been taken advantage of by owners that understand the system better. So now all of their draft picks are going to the haves. They are the have-nots. They don't have much talent, and they don't have a lot of points in the bank either. So, you know, the cupboard is bare. It's the same syndrome you see in the real NBA, right? You look at the modern, you know, Phoenix Suns. New owner comes in and trades everything for some superstar players in the hopes of winning. You almost never see an owner come in with a long-term plan. And I will admit, even I, when I left the Hawks in the old PBSL, I did not leave them with the most talent. Now, part of that was because there had been some circumstances changing in my life where I had not been able to pay much attention for the last couple of years of trying to, or the last couple of seasons before I left, of trying to build my roster, do my training. But one of the things I do pride myself for doing is leaving with a huge bank of points so that the next owner wouldn't be starting from absolutely nothing. But, you know, again, to go back to that point, at least right now, theoretically, the talent is well distributed through the league. There are no super teams. And you have the ability now, and this is something else I would recommend just in general. Although if you want to trade your picks to me, fine. Hold on to your picks, especially your first round picks, for at least the first season or two until you see where you shake out in the wash. Because there will be some shuffling around. There will be some sifting as we see who drafted better than everybody else. But again, this is about as evenly distributed as the talent pool is ever likely to be. So do not be in a hurry to get rid of your draft picks, because if it turns out that you are toward the bottom end of the league, you're probably only at the bottom end of the league by 5 or 10%, and a draft pick can do that. Whereas if you trade that pick away, you might improve a couple percent, but now you've given someone else a major boost to their talent roster. So make sure you understand what you're trading when you're trading it away. Unless you're trading with me, in which case I'll happily take all your picks. that would be my advice, and then I'll probably take the next pod after we've had a couple of sims in the books to break down how the divisions are actually sorting out, because it's always very tough in the preseason to get a lot of reads on, you know, whether or not the cream is going to go to the top in the preseason, especially because the computer is notably lacking in being able to read how you want to run your teams. It's very locked into what is a player's current position and setting him up to play there. If you have a guy, let's say you picked at small forward that you wanted to start at power forward, and guess what? The Simputer probably didn't do that. And I think a lot of teams are probably looking at their draft or their depth charts and going, man, what the heck was the computer thinking here? Not really a lot of general takeaways you can take away from the preseason. You can see how some of the players are going to turn into stars. again, I think the pointing out that this is kind of what the natural level of home court advantage is, and it's between, you know, 55 and a 70% win rate. I think it winds up landing at about 60, 62%. And so that might incent you to make a push to do well for the playoffs. You know, make sure you get your seeding in order. And I guess, you know, there's plenty more to talk about once the games get started. I'd like to thank everybody who has welcomed me back. It's good to be back. I mentioned in the town hall thread that I had dealt with a bit of a medical situation about 18 months ago. Those who remember my old podcast may notice occasionally there's some pausing or there's some stuttering where there didn't used to be. I notice it, even if nobody else does. That's probably because I know what I'm thinking, and when my mouth doesn't form the words as I like, I notice. Again, this is not a play for sympathy. This is more a, I guess, an explanation of if there are times where I'm stuttering or fumbling over my words, I'm sorry, I'm doing my best. But again, it's good to be back. A quick thank you to Doug for reaching out and poking me and letting me know that a reset was in the offing. And I'm looking forward to seeing how this season goes. I think it's going to be exciting. So with that, again, I don't want these to go much more than about 30 minutes. I think that's about the ideal length to listening to me ramble. And you know, besides, as time goes on, you know, if I'm doing about one of these every week, that's about 6 weeks worth of podcasts. That's, you know, 3 hours you can listen to for each season. And besides, at some point you may get tired of listening to me ramble. But that's what it is. It's good to be back. And as I mentioned, I'm really looking forward to seeing the first couple sims, seeing how they shake out and how people's real lineups perform. I know the Portland Blunt Force Trauma Blazers did not set a lineup that looked anything like what I would have did. And so, you know, again, how is this team really? I don't know yet. That's the frustrating thing with the preseason, is it can lead to a lot of false annoyance and a lot of false hope. So we'll see how things go once the games actually start to count. Last thing, I guess, if you have any suggestions or ideas for enhancements, feel free to send them my way. I can't promise to do everything, but if it makes sense and if I think it will improve the experience on the site or improve the experience of the league, I'll see what I can do to make it work. So thanks again, everyone. And with that, we're going to call it a wrap and move it out of here.